Not too bad. Oh, we are live now. You go
live.
What a great premature start there.
That's how we do. That's how we do. The ladies love us. All right. Yeah, it's number four, episode four. It's been a little while since our two great nations have connected. Our time zones are insane, but Commonwealth represent. So how are you doing down there, Double C?
Not too bad, G. It's quite sunny here in the... Pretty much we've actually seen summer for the first time this year, so it's actually quite interesting in that sense that there's actually a bit of sun out, and I know it's a bit different up there in Canada, but, yeah, that's what happens when you're in the middle of winter in the snow.
Well, that's good to hear. Actually, we're one of the very, very small areas of Canada that has not been hit by this nasty, nasty winter northern crunch that has been affecting almost all of the U.S. and Canada. It's actually above 0 degrees Celsius and will remain so for the following couple days if the predictions of the weather actually come true. But, you know, there's a saying in Calgary, you know, pack your parka, pack your rain gear, pack your shorts, because you don't know what the fuck is going to happen. It's a weird spot.
I think that's the same with every weather everywhere. It's just, ooh, okay.
I can't complain.
I mean, here it was, I'm not joking, it was bright sunshine, barely a cloud in the sky, and bucketing down with rain at the same time.
Man, shifting. Ups and downs, it's like the end of an LSD trip, all right? Getting all the metaphors out there to incriminate myself. This is good.
Start yourself on a good note. And so when you mean snow, you actually mean, rightio, I get you now.
Yeah, you know it, Canadian. That's what we do. Copious amounts of illicit narcotics. All right.
So not only is this the first podcast of the new year, it's the first since we've entered iTunes, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's been actually a lot of little stories. I mean, we're not going to cover them all. We don't have enough time. Since two of the bigger ones that we will cover, I think one though that it just occurred to me that we definitely haven't talked about is the we talked I believe about the initial charges, but we haven't talked about the judge's ruling on everybody's favorite ladies' man, Varlamov, Colorado Avalanche.
He got now, off, didn't he?
He did. Well,
that might not be the best way to put it, but yeah.
And I don't know all the specifics of the ruling. I wasn't in the courthouse. I haven't been privy to the documents. And I know yourself, sir, have not as well. However,
how do you know that? I may be hiding in the background, so peering over the pews. Oh, wait, that's church, isn't it?
It's certainly something that I live in the land of you know, hockey being the most dominant sport. It gets so much press. It did not get a lot of press, and I also find it interesting that the questionable elements of the charges that he has been quoted to say that, you know, had he been in Russia, it would have been worse. And this fellow has been named to the Russian Olympic roster as one of the goaltenders.
Well, and I haven't. That was always the main thing going in. I mean, you had it was always the Russian Olympic teams like, oh, they've done this deliberately so that we can't have Varlamov in our Olympic team.
Yeah, and there was like conspiracy theories and stuff. I mean, okay, we do live, you know, in a world that we've seen figure skaters have their boyfriends take a hammer to another figure skater's knee. So there are certainly like grounds for a reason of a conspiracy. But what did you think about that when that came out? Because it did that got a little bit of wind, but it never really was followed up on.
So the first thing, does that mean we're going to have the Semyon Varlamov sex tape come out like Tonya Harding did, or?
I don't know. That's
I mean, well, it's never. good press, I assume, I suppose, that somebody sort of assaulted somebody, or I actually can't quite remember what happened, but yeah, it's not the good press, even though there was always any publicity is good publicity, but you don't really want that hovering around your head, and it was probably the best thing like Colorado did, is that just let him play, rather than sort of, okay, look, you've got to sit out, and then we've got to let this keep going and going and going, but I think because of the fact that they let him play, sort of, the day or two after it happened, it just kind of went away. Everybody sort of forgot about it.
Well, they did decriminalize marijuana, and short-term memory can be an issue with that. But no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I wonder. It beckons itself to this idea that celebrities and athletes, a lot of the time, seem to get lesser charges and sentences. I mean, there are exceptions to the rule, and they tend to sometimes serve them in the off season. I wonder if there'll be any follow up in the off season for Viral Imov, you know, a la Habibulin, who had to go and live in a desert camp. What was it, Arizona, a couple summers ago, for his DUI charges? I don't know.
Oh, I was just thinking Eddie Belfour. I mean, I don't know if Viral Imov's got a spare million to give up to the cops, does he?
That is true. And there have. Go ahead.
I was just saying, Al already billed for 20. I can't remember when that happened, but yeah. No, it'll be interesting. I don't think anything will happen because I don't think anything will happen from an NHL standpoint, because they'll feel that well, if Alan Wolf gets punished, he's off to play in the KHL next season. But so I don't think anything will happen on that front. I don't think anything will happen. I think you've probably almost heard the end of it, unless somebody just wants to come up 2 or 3 years from now, which wouldn't be the first time, sort of complain that this has happened to them at some point in the past 15 years.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting topic. The NHL does have a slight history of sexual abuse being kind of ignored. It's... You know, I mean, one can only look at what happened with Theo Fleury and Graham James and the coaching debacle there. I don't know. I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus unless, you know, innocent until proven guilty has to. I mean, and I don't think it's the NHL's role to enforce the law in any way either. They're going to have probably enough issues to deal with you know, other elements of their game potentially. Obviously fighting another thing that's continued to be a hot topic. We saw another major, you know, story that we haven't chatted about, was the Sean Thornton 15 game suspension for his mugging of Brooks Orpik. What did you think about the ruling with that? 15 games, is that too much, too little, or just right?
No, I think it may have been a little bit too much, considering Orpik probably deserved it, in the sense after the cheap shot he handed Louis Eriksson sort of earlier in the game. It kind of, I mean, I posted a blog about it on boardhockeyfan.com. Bing, cheap pop. But I mean, 15, it sort of offered flashbacks to sort of the more Bertuzzi incident, where, I mean, it's not as brutal as Bertuzzi more, but sort of that all started over a cheap shot on a star player and then refusing to fight, and then sort of one of them getting the revenge on Steve Moore or an Orpik, as this case with Thornton. I mean, Orpik was challenged to fight by Thornton earlier in the game after the hit on Eriksson, and then Orpik just refused. So Thornton's gone, well, you're not going to get away with this, and bang, belted him.
I can't argue with you. I look at it, it's such a tough issue. It's one of these things, like, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of people that want fighting out of the game, but there's also the players who know have been pulled, and the mass majority of them were for keeping it in the game, for self-policing the sport itself, to prevent, you know, the cheap shot artists from doing, you know, what they do. And it begs the question, if fighting is forced out too early, like, how do they prevent, you know, the little high sticks and the things, you know, that don't get picked up by the referees from happening, and things that have caused, you know, in some cases, some significant injuries in them themselves. I'm kind of at a loss at like what the solution is. And I'm sure that, you know, the people that are employed by the league and the coaches, the players and the GMs and so forth that actually are out there playing the game, if they had a solution and something easy to solve it, they would do so. But part of me also kind of wants to see the cheap shot artist, you know, with the lack of a better term, see him get his ass kicked once in a while, because it's like if they're going to allow this stuff to happen, you got to eventually pay the piper.
Exactly. I mean, it's the cheap shot artist is really the problem, or I think anyway. I mean, you can have anybody fight and you just have two people brawl and maybe the odd punch gets thrown and that's the end of it. But then you've got people like, well, I think it was the same game where James Neal sort of took the opportunity to knee Brad Marchand in the head. Sure, he got 5 games for it, but that could have caused concussion that ends Marchand's career almost. Because, I mean, it happened to Mark Savard. It can happen to anybody. And then with the shot on Eriksen, it's like, oh, yeah, let's just drill Eriksen. Well, after he's gone rid of it, I know there's a period of time after you've lined up the shot that you can have it, but Orpik hasn't. It's not like Orpik isn't the first time. He didn't get suspended for the shot on Eriksen. It seems dirty, but Thornton's only standing up for his teammates. I mean, or do you just want? Because if you get rid of fighting, then the cheap shot artists are just going to come out in full force, realizing there's no repercussion of what they do because fighting's gone. Which in turn will just lead to worse hockey, because in the sense that everybody will just try and cheap shot the other one and injure all the star players, and then you'll end up with George Parros and Cole Nor in the first line. And in all honesty, I don't think any true hockey fan wants that. Even though that would be hilarious, I don't think anybody wants it.
That's true. It brings up like this just total dilemma where it's like, okay, well, if we ban fighting and we go to, you know, and allow this to happen, this type of situation, well, then now that we have to try to call every single penalty, oh, now we need like instant replays to determine all of these, slow down the game. Nobody wants that. I mean, we don't want a penalty called every like 30 or 60 seconds, because this stuff happens all the time. And I mean, the viewer at home sees a lot of it happen and not be called. I think anybody who watches the sport can't really deny that reality. It's just such a difficult situation to be in. And then there's just one other factor, which is their move about fighting. A big part of it is going to revolve around concussions, right? And what happened with the NFL and the, you know, the lawsuit there and the settlement there. And of course, the NHL does not want to go down that route. But it's almost that they have to send a message out in a public way that, you know, we are trying to prevent head trauma. And yet at the same time, there's all the statistical evidence that shows more concussions are caused by incidents that have nothing to do with fighting. I tell you, man, I, as a fan, I don't like this whole scenario. There's a few of them in hockey like this that not all related to, you know, the way the game's played and other elements of it, but I just don't know. I don't know where the solution lies, and I don't know how they can solve it. And I think, you know, I mean, we just both already said we don't mind seeing the occasional fight, but do you think, okay, I'll put it this way. How does this bode for the sport of hockey? Is it a positive like outlook you have, or negative outlook, or are you kind of like me, or you're just like you don't know what direction to go, because every choose your own adventure page seems to end up kind of looking like another problem is in front of you?
There isn't a solution. That's the simple thing. Unless you make hockey a non-contact sport, you're always going to have headshots. You're always going to have it in any contact sport. You're going to have some form of contact to the head. It's just inevitable. So you can't, unless you sort of put them up like the old celebrity boxing where they've got the big foam boxing helmets that are like 15 feet big and just X amount of padding everywhere. You can't really do much about it. I mean, unless you get rid of all contact and say, right, the only way you can sort of get the puck is by taking the stick away, then that's the only, and even then you probably have incidental contact. You can't really get the aspect of concussions out of a contact sport, out of anything really. It's just sort of, it's almost sort of something you have to live with, in the sense that you do this, this is a consequence of what may happen. It's sort of, if you don't want to do that, then do something else. Be a bank teller, where the likeliness of getting a concussion is probably a bit less than, I'd say, than sort of being a hockey player. But that's the only solution is that there isn't one. You kind of just sort of have to try and go along and maybe try and nullify as best you can to try and stop them less occurring. But you're not going to get rid of them completely. You're not going to sort of, concussions are going to happen. Major injuries are going to happen. It's just part and parcel. I mean, you have a look at the NFL at the amount of concussions and sort of knee injuries and career-ending injuries that happen in there, and everyone's like, oh, okay. But yet it just seems that the NHL has almost got like this image of thuggery as well, that it's sort of, because of the fighting, because of that, that sort of still rubs off on some people, that it's like, oh, so they see this image and it's like, oh, okay, so then they must assume that they've got to get rid of concussions, they've got to get rid of this. It's almost like nobody wants, it's more of an image. Now think about it, it's more the image of thuggery than the concussion problem. Just in the sense that, because people are fighting, oh, they're fighting, they're going to hit each other in the head, they're going to cause a concussion. If we get rid of the fighting, then they're not going to hit each other in the head and they're going to stop concussions. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, the image is there because it's the highlight, right? I mean, you might not watch the sport. Let's say you're Joe, sports fan average, and you're watching ESPN highlights, and they're going to show you a couple things in games. They're going to show you like points being scored and notable moments, and fighting is considered a notable moment. So you see your Deke and your big save or your crazy awesome goal, and then you see the guy scrapping and. So it's like you say, it's the image that the average fan or even the average sports pundit, has a stereotype of hockey that it's exactly that, which is kind of messed up because, the average game doesn't even contain a fight in this day and age. And meanwhile, you have other sports that the whole point of the sport, and I'm not going to sit here and disrespect boxing or MMA, because I actually kind of enjoy both of those sports a little bit, but that is the sport. There's no goals being scored, there's no like toe drag dangle to the front of the net and George St. Pierre retires with a hat trick. No, he retired because, well, debatably other things, but the sport takes its toll.
And well, unless you count Anderson Silva's leg as a dangle, then
that's a little Sid Vicious action going on. Hey, I saw that one live. That was rough. I didn't need to see the highlight of that one again. But of course, that also happened in the NCAA Final Four last year. We saw a guy break his leg just jumping up and down. So it is what it is, I suppose.
Well, then maybe the solution to the problem is sort of what they do with sort of those video. I don't know whether or not they do it in the States and Canada, but they definitely do it here, is that they don't advertise sort of the video games that are sort of 18 plus, the sort of the R-rated games. They don't, you're not allowed to sort of show video footage of them in a store. You're only allowed to sort of, you're allowed to have the case on the shelf, but that's all the advertising you can do for it. You're not allowed to do sort of any extra advertising promoting this game. Maybe that's a solution, in the sense that when you've got all your sports highlight shows and whatever, is that they're not allowed to show they're not allowed to show the fighting aspect. You're allowed to show the goals, you're allowed to show all the skill moves, etc. But then when it comes to sort of the massive hits, the injury causing hits or the fights, that you're not allowed to show them. And then that might sort of, I mean, it doesn't ruin the game of hockey for those who are fans, but then for those who aren't, they can sort of go, oh, okay, maybe they've toned down a little bit. And that sort of might sort of drag more people in.
Now, do they do this? I don't know how big the sport is where you're at. Do they show like the NASCAR crashes, or are those considered like a rating system difference as well?
I You've got me thinking. I think they do, but they do warn sort of people beforehand that the following may contain graphic footage of a nature of some sort.
Yeah.
And sort of they warn people sometimes and say, look, oh, this is a horrifying crash that's going to happen. So it looks...
Because I like where you're headed with that and the concept of presenting it in that regard, because there is a rubbernecking element to the human behavioral pattern that, you know, we've all you know been privy to, whether we're driving a car or in a car or in a bus or whatever, and everybody's slowing down to check out the guy, you know, off the side of the road looking for an accident. Oh, it turns out he's changing a flat, but people are hoping to see, you know, some graphic, brutal accident, whether they want to admit it or not. And I mean, we're probably all guilty of this. I would be hard pressed to find someone who I think I could honestly believe who isn't. I know I've turned my head to look. I get mad at the people who slow down. I mean, you can drive by quickly and look, but that's inner road rage. That's different. But I think there's something to that, that like having a warning in place would be good. But I do think people who are going out of their way, you know, to watch the highlights anyway, kind of are hoping to see highlights of a fight. So if you put that sort of barrier in front of them, it makes it more difficult for them to get on a pedestal and judge the sport openly and just simply say, oh, well, that's all it is. It's like, no, we warned you. This happens occasionally. You chose to watch it.
Exactly. And I mean, and then that way, if you say, oh, yeah, it's, there's going to be a hard hit in this fight that, or there's going to be a hard hit in the following package that you may want to look away. You might not want children to watch.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's still not going to stop people from watching, because those who like hockey know it's there and are going to watch it. Those who don't like it or sort of aren't into it are going to stay away.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, you know, it lends itself to the other argument about, you know, stereotypes as well as violence. You know, when we were talking about broken legs, I mean, we're going to get to it momentarily. Broken legs, Steven Stamkos, not involved with the fight. Nothing to do with the fight. Broke his leg.
Crosby's concussion.
Yes.
Not involved in a fight.
That's right.
But yet fighting's to blame.
It's frustrating, absolutely, to say the least. I think the concept, you know, of putting some sort of rating system in place for highlights, or at least if that's the way you want to present it, would be, you know, beneficial. The sport's changed a lot up here. I know you're familiar with the Rock'em Sock'em Hockey Don Cherry Fighting Collection. Hey, maybe we're a bit hypocritical. Maybe we should have had our own warning on our little fight competition we did over the lockout into the shortened season last year. And that's food for thought, because I think as a more educated fan, you know, and more being aware of the stereotype of the non-fan or the people that are just wanting to see the car accident, that perhaps, you know, the fan who isn't in favor of the fight should consider that reality, that if we're for it, and this goes for the players, and I don't care, we didn't lace up the skates. I think we have the right. We're putting money in their pockets to maybe be a little more self-conscious of the fact that if we want the sport to grow, we have to be aware that we need the image to change. We need to be selling the positive points. We need to be selling, you know, the skill and the talent and the players that, quite honestly, we're going to see in the Olympics, that more of them than not probably have had one fight in a season period ever.
Yeah. As opposed to sort of, you don't see the Colt Norris and the Zach Stortinis and the like sort of making up Team USA and Team Canada.
Oh, well, any of them. It's quite a more balanced playing field. You know, it's unfortunate we didn't get our friend Dan Thompson on the site. I'm going to segue, because we probably could do about 8 podcasts on fighting alone, you and I. he did a great job at covering. It was kind of one-sided. It was from the point of view of Canada. But we did have a good series of articles looking at the World Juniors, which for the most part was a demonstration of skill play. And also, I mean... I'm bummed out. Yes, I am Canadian. Yes, I was rooting for Team Canada to win, but no, they didn't. And I don't think the best team lost. I think the best teams won. We came in fourth because
we're number four. We're number four.
Hey, man, I'm going to be happy if I'm there at the end of the year in the Yahoo Hockey Pool. Woo! But,
No. You'll only be a finalist then. You won't actually win the tournament. That's just how it's worked.
That's the way it goes. And you look at the Spangler as well. I mean, it was a demonstration of the talent that's out there.
Yeah, well, from what I saw, I didn't see a fight at all during the entire Spangler Cup.
Yeah, the Spangler was a pretty good tournament. I mean, it wasn't, you know, the top-level talent, but there are many players, you know, that are very, very good. And there were some really good close games. My favorite was Davos Canada rematch of 4-5. We did win that one. It didn't carry us to the end, but there was some real. The Spangler, I was really impressed by this year. How did you feel about it?
I mean, there was definitely some good. I mean, it sort of seemed a little bit slower than what I thought, but it wasn't too bad. I mean, especially with Moscow, with watching all the former great NHLers in Alexander Radulov and even Sergei Fedorov came back just for that tournament, I believe.
Yeah.
I don't know, but he played in that tournament as well. But the one thing that threw me off with the Spangler was watching Team Canada. Oh, who'd they play in the semifinals? Genève Servette, yeah, in the Swiss League, with Team Canada playing the Rochester Americans goaltender. That was sort of the one thing that's got, oh, hang on a minute. Rather than the play on the ice, like, hang on a minute, I've never seen anybody play for two teams in the same tournament.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go to the Olympic watchers later on and we'll see the old man of the hill, Peter Nedved, playing for the Czechs, who played for Team Canada in Lillehammer in 94. But yeah, not in the, I mean, but that's sort of 20 years ago. Not in the same tournament, you don't say it.
And I think the context is kind of different as well, considering, like you say, the same tournament, same year. Nedved had defected, like, because of the Cold War, right? And it was kind of a completely different situation, whereas, like you say, like, it was like, okay, one team's out, hop it on board the next one. And it's, I didn't notice that until you actually noted it. And I find that's a trivia question right there that I wonder, honestly, if we'll ever see that again.
I don't know if it's happened previously. I don't know if it'll happen again, but just for that one moment, it's like, okay. But the one thing I found ironic is that the team that eliminated the Rochester Americans was Team Canada. So yeah. It's kind of like that old rule that I've heard is, oh, well, you defeat a team in the playoffs, okay, you get to take one of their players along with you and play with them.
It reminds me of I don't recall which of the two fellows on another podcast you and I enjoyed, Murray versus Wyszynski, who talked about the idea if you defeat someone in a playoff series in the NHL, you get to draft someone off the losing team to join yours.
That would be Marek. Yeah, that's what I was referring to without mentioning names. But
I think that's kind of an interesting consolation prize to winning a round. I really do. I don't know how that would fly, if it would ever get over or not, but I think I would be a fan of it. I think that would be kind of neat.
It would just cause havoc, I think, between everyone.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you go back to the cheap shot idea and the fighting aspect, and now he's on your team.
Or if it's like Pittsburgh, Washington, and say Pittsburgh go through and take Ovechkin with them.
Yep. You're with us. Ovechkin. Hop on.
And then you've got Ovechkin and Crosby on in the same team. Although they'd have him and Malkin, so that's probably he'd probably be stuck on the line with Malkin and James Neal, which
that would be evil.
Probably evil for everybody, because they'd be probably all in fights on the bench between teams just because we don't like you. Bang.
There you go. They have to give him his own locker room. Coach Cooper come in there for like 2 minutes out of the break, give him his orders, and go back to the rest of the team.
It's like, why the fuck should I listen to you? Because you're not my coach. I'm only here because I have to be. I'm not here because I want to be. It's not going to be playing for you next season. Why the fuck do I care?
Yeah, like, turn around and score on his own goal.
Yeah, fuck you. That'd probably be what would happen. It'd be who could score the most own goals for the other team.
Yeah. Ovechkin, well, natural hat trick.
Well, I mean, if you were, say, Ovechkin or Giroux or someone from there playing for the Penguins, it's like, do you really want the Penguins to win because of you? Of course don't.
No, it's a bit of a pipe dream, but it is a neat idea, to say the least. But you're right. I don't think that shit would fly. These guys are too competitive.
It'd just be people taking out the ringer, so that the ringer didn't score goals for the opposition. So it'd just be the entire game, other people trying to stop one person on their team from scoring for the other team.
They could be like a tag team. They'd be their own team out there.
Exactly. So you've got the two of them sort of teaming up, and it's like, all right, we'll take all these on at once.
The outsiders.
Yeah.
Hey, yo.
And then one person turns onto them to become the third man.
There you go.
So Ovechkin joins Pittsburgh, and then Malkin turns on Crosby to join Ovechkin and becomes the third man.
Schiavone's losing his shit. God damn you! Straight to hell.
Oh, brother. Dude. Yeah, bye-bye. Moving on, because I'm good at segues.
Yes.
We'll jump quickly onto the Winter Classic before we head to the rosters, because they sort of intertwine. So, your thoughts on the Winter Classic, G?
Okay. Well, I like many, I was following the build, the HBO 24/7. I kind of enjoyed the series. It was a hit or a miss. I mean, you get different criticisms. There's precedents to set and expectations of going into it. But you kind of want that series to feel like it's leading up to like the big match, you know, the way HBO presents it. And I'll give them credit. They probably did as well as they could have with what they were given to work with. I mean, getting kicked out of locker rooms doesn't help. But the game itself, I actually thoroughly enjoyed. I know the conditions were really snowy, and it's winter. I mean, what the fuck, you know? It's better than rain. It's better than rain delays. I'd rather watch dude shovel a couple extra times and have to wait like 8 more hours or whatever the delay was with that Chicago game. In that regard, though, I also, you know, thought that we got a nice close matchup. We went right down to the shootout, which, you know, love it or hate it, it's essential way to end a game early and definitively without having endless overtime or a tie, and that's its purpose. And you know, I can't complain. I thought it was a fun game to watch, and be honest with you, I'm glad we didn't see anyone get like seriously hurt because of the, you know, the way the ice was, and maybe the fact that they were kind of hindered by the quality of the ice. They weren't able to move as fast. Maybe that's a good thing. It might be the other way around when we get the outdoor game in California, where they're going to be trying their damnedest to keep the friggin' ice cold. And that's going to be quite the spectacle and visual to see too, and quite the contrast just as much to watch a game where they might be able to have shots of the beach from a distance from the arena. I don't know the exact setup and the geography.
On the beach.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to all of the outdoor classic games or whatever they're calling them all. I don't know.
Stadium,
I think the
series.
Outdoor series, yeah.
The stadium series, and then you've got the Heritage Classic.
That's right. They got all these names. I'm not even. They're all. I call them outdoor games. At some point, it just becomes like pay per view names, and there's just too many of them. So I'll just stick with, you know, wrestling matches, sans. You know, pay-per-view names equivalent, which they're outdoor games, but I'm going to hopefully be able to catch all of them or bits of all of them, if nothing else, you know, if not even go so far to like record them and watch them later. I have to give it a thumbs up. I really felt, regardless of the HBO element of it, you know, which I'll give a passing grade to, the game itself, I was satisfied. I wasn't a fan. you know, of either team going in. So I didn't really have anything else to go on except for wanting to watch a good game and enjoy the spectacle for what it was. And I feel they delivered. How about yourself?
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, from what I saw of the Winter Classic, it was, I could watch, I mean, I could sit there and it's like, oh, this is awesome. It's sort of, it was just something different to what everyone, I think, was used to as well. I mean, that's probably the whole point of it, is the fact that it's sort of something, you're not in the ice, they're sort of outside, you're in the elements. I mean, that, the elements kind of remind me, I think, was it Pittsburgh Buffalo the first one? Yeah. Where it was kind of just snowing everywhere and it was just carnage, yeah. So it kind of reminded me of the first one in the sense that the conditions played a part and, well, I mean, it sort of ended up in the shootout as well with the conditions playing the part with Thomas Tatar trying to deke and shriek his way through everyone just with the ice sort of being chunky with that. And then Toronto just sort of, oh, yeah, the ice is in, we'll just hit it low and hit it and hope. And it worked for them in the end. But, yeah, I think the game itself was good from what I've seen. The 24/7 stuff, to be honest, I think I saw the first episode and went, oh, okay. And then good thing was it got better as it went on. Because, but no, overall, I mean, it'll work next year. I think next year Washington have it. It's going to be Washington-Philly from what I understand next year. I know it hasn't been officially announced yet, but that's sort of, I mean, I was more interested in the alumni games, to be honest with you. Sort of, the look of the classic. Sort of just the classic, the guys from the past that you never got the chance to see growing up. It's like, oh, you get to see them now. And then watching Chris Chelios' celebration sort of after he scored sort of, I think, made the whole thing for me. But then again, I am an old soul, so.
Yeah, I caught most of the alumni games. I enjoyed them as well. I know there's a lot of criticism that, you know, around all-star games and what their, you know, purpose is. And I understand that a big part of it is marketing and getting, you know, all these, like, you know, top-end talent in the same place at the same time to display, you know, their skill sets. But there's, like, no defense. And it just kind of sometimes feels like a lackluster element to the all-star game. But with an alumni game, it feels a little more pure. I know that sounds weird saying pure, I guess, but it feels a little bit more like the guys genuinely are out there just playing a pickup game for the love of the sport, nothing else. And it's not like a hard feelings element of it where they feel like they have to be there. These are, I think, guys that actually want to be there. They've been off, you know, the ice for a season or 10 or even more. And I think there's like a genuine sincerity to the fact that the way they play those alumni games, you know, kind of is displayed. And I think that it comes across on the screen and in the viewer. It's just a more enjoyable experience than an all-star game. And I don't know. What do you think about like that? Like, that's kind of my take on it.
I think it's sort of more from a younger standpoint. I mean, the kids growing up sort of into the sport, and it's like, oh, wow, we get to see Steve Yzerman or Brendan Shanahan, or we get to see these guys that sort of were there 15 years ago that most kids sort of would never have seen. It's like, we get to see these guys in the flesh. We get to see them play. Ooh. And then that sort of drags them in as well. Even when there's no fighting, there's no fisticuffs, there's no sort of violence, there's no heavy checking, it's just skating and pretty much a bunch of old guys playing hockey.
Yeah. That's, I think, you know, kind of the unwritten rule of these alumni games is these guys, they're not playing for contracts. They're you know, the scoreboard matters to a degree, you know, but it's not as much as an important element to the game for them. It's more the opportunity to be able to, you know, reunite with some old buddies, play a little hockey, have some fun. And I think they probably realize that too, is that they, you know, a lot of these guys are pretty famous. And like, you know, with the younger, especially the younger fans, like who never saw them play in their heyday, that I'm sure a lot of them are well aware of that. And I think that probably even motivates them more, is just kind of to go out there and say, yeah, you know, I mean, there was a time I dominated this league, or, you know, I was the go-to defenseman player. I mean, maybe a bit of pride. That's not necessarily a bad thing in this particular regard either. It's, I don't know. I'm kind of leaning more towards it over watching an All-Star game period. Like, I like the alumni games a lot. I think they're great. I'm glad we got two this year too. I think that was, I don't know if that can be recreated every year. I guess it really depends on the pool that's available. You know, I think the Red Wings certainly had the edge going into it, but the Leafs had a good showing. And I mean, I won't lie to you. Being an Oilers fan, I still kind of marked out when Lanny McDonald, you know, was skating. I was like, oh, the mustache, it's back. Love it. You know, there were certainly guys on the Red Wings alumni, you know, that I was quite happy that they found a way to get them in there. You know, Yzerman being one of them, especially considering all the things he has going on with both the league as a GM and, you know, and organizing, you know, Team Canada as well. Is that it's a pretty full plate for the dude. And like, I'm good on him and the league for finding a way to make that happen. And yeah, that Chelios moment was definitely a highlight of that particular game for sure.
Well, I mean, you were talking with Yzerman. I mean, Shanahan, it's not like Brendan Shanahan's not busy or anything. I mean, he's only the Department of Player Safety, so he's pretty much got to watch the major parts of every game to sort of... So it's not like he wasn't busy or anything, so...
He can ban himself.
But I still found time to boo Jay Noordendijk when he came out for that Maple Leafs. Not really playing, but for his GM skills.
And they managed to get a number of guys, you know, some of the older fellas that, you know, weren't able to really be in condition to get out there on both sides. You know, they got them represented and you know, the quote unquote, you know, staff or management or coaching or whatever. And that's cool. I think it means probably more to fans of those teams than it does to non-fans. To be able to like get a better, you know, glimpse into the past and the culture of the team that they follow. I know certainly with the Heritage Classic the Oilers had way back in what was like the negative ridiculousness that they had. It didn't matter to me as much that it was that cold and the guys were obviously playing, you know, in pretty brutal conditions. It was just really cool to be able to watch. You know, a lot of the guys I grew up watching as a little G. So
exactly, and I mean, where else would you see Ty Domi snipe one past Manny Legacy?
Yeah.
Which was a moment for me, and although the one thing that probably amused me most, and this sounds a bit childish, is Jonathan Bernier's beanie, or his little hat that he had on during the Winter Classic. I said, he's got a hat on. That's awesome. I mean, sort of. I think it's just the little things like that that sort of. I mean, the fact that it's outside, the fact that it's snowing a year, but I think it's just more the little things that you kind of notice. It's like it looks a bit weird that the crowd's not sort of hard up against the ice either. Is it a good thing? I don't know. You know, I'm trying to. I don't know. Maybe I looked at this year's from just a different standpoint rather than just watching the game. As good as it was on it was, I sort of tried to notice the little things as well, sort of, that made it what it was and probably made it better for me in the sense that, okay, this is a bit different, yeah. Overanalyze too much. But, as I can segue nicely, during, was it the second intermission of the Winter Classic? They announced the U.S. Olympic team, I believe.
Yeah, there's a lot of little kids on the U.S. Olympic team this year. There's only three adults.
Three adults. Well, your thoughts on the team first as I sort of load up information I've got here. I mean, from what I can see, there's a lot of forwards that were there last year. I mean, there's only five forwards out of the list that are making their first appearance from last year, but then they've gone almost inexperienced in defence. With only all-pick in Suter returning. And then Ryan Miller's played well enough to be there, as much as I hate to admit it. But I don't know. But who would start in net? I mean, would you start the Ryan Miller, knowing he sort of got you to a gold medal game, or would you go with Quick? Because somehow I get the feeling Jimmy Howe is number three.
That's a tough call. If you'd asked me, you know, at the beginning of the season with the States, I would have probably been leaning towards Quick. He's coming back from pretty long-term injury. I'd be watching his performance leading up to the Olympics with Quick. How is a good goalie? And so Miller's been playing pretty well in front of a team that really has been doing poorly. I mean, they've had a good run as of late, but he does have the experience factor. I just don't know if experience is ever the way to go though with the Olympics. I mean I look at the team. I'm definitely obviously going to be rooting for Canada, you know, being Canadian. And I look at what happened in 2006, and they went with all players pretty much that had experience, and the team tanked, man. I'm a big supporter of the idea of go with the hot hand, go with the guy who is on fire. All the players, they should do that. They shouldn't pick guys because they've been loyal to a program, you know, because their team is constantly out of the playoffs. And they shouldn't, I mean, because honestly, that's a big factor. And they shouldn't be going towards guys because they've been there, just because they've been there. They should be going with players that are really doing well right now, in the now. That's kind of my philosophy on it. Right now, I think it's a toss-up between Miller and Howard. Unless Quick goes on a streak, I would kind of have to lean towards... And I'm always saying Miller, because lately he's been epic. But we're about, you know, what are we, a month and almost a half off? So shit could change, man.
And I mean, that should give... I mean, Howard and Quick have just both came back from injury, as my fantasy team would tell you. Yeah, they've both only just came back. Howard's played three games since he came back, including the Winter Classic, which is sort of... And Quick has played two. So, yeah, they've only just came back. But then... So they've sort of taken a chance with the goalies. I mean, you've got a bloke like Ben Bishop, who's played almost lights out for Tampa this season. I mean, he's almost probably unlucky to not make the team. Schneider as well, probably a little bit unlucky. So there's probably a few guys in the goaltending ranks that they've almost gone with, all right, let's go with the best we've got, as opposed to, all right, let's go to the best guys in form that we have.
Yeah, it's going to come down to, I guess, you know, some of those prelim games where they're going to get an idea of what's up. And, like, a big part of a goaltender's performance will be the players in front of them and how well they're gelling as well. You know, it's kind of a bit of a crapshoot when if you don't know if your players have chemistry too, especially your defensive squad, because those are guys, you know, that are integral to a goalie's performance.
Exactly, which is probably why the US have gone with the Orpik-Martin combination. I know Dan Bylsma is in charge of Team USA, or sort of has a hand in making the roster, but I mean, Orpik and Martin play together, so I think that might also be the same thing. I mean, Canada's done the same thing with Bo Meester and Pete Angelo, and sort of, so they've kind of got familiarities, which is why Kuhn, which is probably the only reason why Kuhn's got picked for Team Canada, so that he could play with Crosby. So I think you've sort of got to have the experience aspect of a big event such as the Olympics, but I think you've also got to have sort of chemistry that's sort of there. I mean, you can sort of have people in a camp. You can't really sort of take everyone in the Olympic squads out on a camp now, have them play for 6 weeks, which is probably what you'd like to do. Have them sort of away for 6 weeks and just play together and build up your chemistry that way, but you can't really do that. So it's going to be interesting. I think it's pretty much only going to be a case of who's going to gel first. Who's going to be able to gel the quickest, the best. And which probably where Russia comes into it a little bit, because, well, so then again, a lot of their players are everywhere, but... Yeah.
I think the U.S. team actually looks pretty solid on paper. I mean, there's a few players that have been criticized for, like, the fact that they might be too slow or whatever, but I mean, hockey, a lot of it is a passing game and a positional game. So I don't know if that really is as massive an issue. And I mean, some of these guys, they're on new teams, you know, and some of them are potentially may or may not be there when it comes down to the final puck drop, you know, a couple hours before the game because of, you know, injuries that they have now that might not really have recovered. But I definitely, if I had a country that I was rooting for going up against the U.S., I would not take them even slightly, you know, as an underdog. They're a team to beat, hands down, a team that has lots of scoring ability. And honestly, their back end, like you say, I mean, we got to see how they're going to gel, but some pretty bloody good players on that team, all sides of every end of it.
Is it as good as the Finnish goaltending core? Or?
That is, well, goaltending can win a short series. Hot goaltender, one game, and you're done.
Exactly. I mean, even though Finland don't have Pekka Rinne due to injury, who probably may or may not have gotten the start, I mean, when you can still have Rask, Niemi, and if Kari Litton's your third, I mean, I know Kari can concede a few goals and probably get injured before the tournament begins because that's just Kari Litton. Still, though, I mean, good goaltending win. I mean, you look at Finland's lineup. I mean, they're sort of Solani. He's playing in his sixth Olympics, which is just mind-boggling. I mean, but could a side like Finland sort of rise up and sort of knock off the Canadas, the USs, the Russias, and almost the Swedes, sort of just on goaltending alone?
I would not say no at all. I completely think it's possible. The team has, you know, a bunch of guys that I'm not as familiar with from the KHL and the Finnish league. However, the guys that I am familiar with, there's some pretty long tooth D-men there, but it's a short tournament. As long as they're playing well and they're healthy, that squad could just simply do it with a single goal game if necessary. And I mean, you have, you know, both Jokinen's there, you got Barkov, that kid could be their leading scorer the way he's been playing. You know, a guy like Solani, you never really know. Like, you can't rule him out. Like, if you say six appearances, well, if you want to talk about leadership and a guy that probably can, like, put a pretty good mood in the room. And then you have, you know, Mikko Koivu there as well, who's another long tooth, but a true bona fide leader. I think Finland is a serious threat as well. I don't think there's like a few teams that are going to be really good in this tournament. I think the majority of them are all potentially gold medal candidates. And, you know, you've named a couple. Can't rule out the Czechs, can't rule out the Swedes. You know, obviously the hype about, you know, the big Canadian roster announcement is more a product of Canadian media, I think, personally, than anything, because I think this sport has completely caught up to Canada. It caught up to Canada a few Olympics ago, as far as I'm concerned. We just happened to win two golds. It doesn't mean that we're on top of the world. Like, I could see them not even meddling. I want to see a medal, but I'm not going to be shocked if they don't.
I mean, there's probably at least I could see the Russians. You've got Russia, who of course playing at home. The US are always there. Canada's always there. Sweden, Finland, and then you've got. What about the outside teams? Like, I don't know whether or not I'll include the Czechs as an outside team, just because I don't think they have goaltending in a sense. But what do you think of the chance of those who aren't sort of pictured to be in the gold medal?
A lot of it can really come down to that, like, hot goaltender. I mean, Switzerland and Gerber outed Canada in 06.
Exactly. And it's not like Switzerland don't have a hot hand now. I mean, they have Jonas Hiller starting for them, so.
Yeah, well, they got Jonas Hiller, who has proven himself as a pretty solid goaltender. They're a possible upset team. I know on paper, you don't have that many NHL players, but the way that the game can be played, sometimes it doesn't matter. I think Switzerland could possibly, if Hiller's hot, yeah, that they could be a threat. I'm not too concerned about honestly Latvia and Austria. I don't know. I mean, anything
like work with you.
You got to get out of that opening round robin scenario. I don't know anything about any of the Austria goaltenders. I've never heard of any of them.
Oh, hang on. They've got Svet. With a name like Svet, he should be able to handle the pressure. And I mean, when you've got a defender like
What about Latvia, who has a goalie who doesn't even have a club? I mean, he could be good, but he was born in 1980, so he's probably like the old, you know, guy who's coming in to like be like the third stringer. But
yeah, you never know.
Maybe JT of Board Wrestling Fan will be excited to know that Gudalevskis, if I'm saying that right, of the Syracuse Crunch, might very well be the starting goalie.
Well, you say he doesn't have a club, and it's always the ones that you don't expect, isn't it?
That's true. They also have Mustugovs, who's 6'2" and weighs 150 pounds.
Oh God,
we're
looking at different sites. I've got him at 6'187", but
oh, in Latvia.
This is according to the NHL website, so...
Okay, there's some discrepancy. Who knows? Maybe that this guy has actually been drafted from Japan and he doesn't exist. Who knows? But I suppose there's always a possibility. Again, like I said, it does come down to a hot goaltender. And anybody who's, like, you know... And made it to this far as potential to make it. But if I was a betting man, I'm sorry. I think if the Czech Republic is sketchy, there are teams like Austria, Latvia, Slovenia, and Norway, I think they're even more sketchy. After that, I think you're looking at the more likely candidates. I mean, all these players are better than me.
Luka Koti?
Well... Okay, almost all of these. No, he's definitely better.
Good old Luka Kunti. All right, and so with that said, what's your pick then? I'm going to put you on the spot right now. Who's your pick and how does it happen?
My pick for who's actually going to get the gold? Well, I guess if I have to predict, and I don't want to, but if I have to predict, to be honest with you, I actually would bank on Finland just because of goaltending. I don't want them to win it, but I look at, like you noted, I mean, that's just the team itself is actually pretty well rounded. The way the tournament works, with the idea that a goalie can carry you the whole way, and if you're solid up front, even if you're not superstars, one goal is all you need if you guys can keep the goal out of the net on the other end. And I think Finland is probably my favorite going in. If I had to rank number two, I think I'm going to say Canada, because I think the fact that they were looking at line combinations with Kunitz and ignoring the fact about like the idea of like the media controversy and being smart enough to bring a guy like PK Subban along, I think that's going to bode well for them a lot. If they can play defensively responsibly in front of their team, I think a guy like Carey Price could actually get them going a long way. That's the guy I think Canada has to rely on. I know Luongo's got experience and all that, but I think Price is probably a safer bet right now. With a better team in front of him, I think he could possibly be your number two. So I'd say I'd give him silver. And I think the hometown factor with Russia and their goaltending, I would give him bronze. If I had to pick today, that would be my picks, but I'm not that confident, dude.
Well, then to be honest, I can't choose between there's sort of four or five. I think there's probably four or five that Czechs could surprise. If Hiller gets on a run, Switzerland could surprise. But I just think the dream scenario would be in Russia, sort of a Russia to Canada, Russia, probably Russia-Canada final, and Ilya Kovalchuk scores the game winner.
that would just enrage the NHL.
Just sort of prove that it's like KHL number one. After all the controversy that happened with him and sort of leaving for the KHL this season, for Kovalchuk to come up and score the game winner, past Luongo or past even the US, past Ryan Miller, sort of.
And they get their golden goal. Even better if he has like a terrible tournament until the very last.
It's sort of the one thing. I mean, I just want Kovalchuk to do something.
There probably will be some moments we're gonna look back at, and it's like in 2010 when Jaeger just got laid out. You know, there's gonna be something like that. I think we can guarantee ourselves there's gonna be those moments where you're just like, holy shit.
Ilya Kovalchuk will score the game winner, assisted by Alexander Radulov.
He has the talent. There's no doubt, and that team has a lot of talent on it. I know there's been some talk about them like loading it up with KHL guys because of that reason, but you know there's a lot of really good players in the KHL, and I think that league. Honestly, I think it would be of great benefit to the sport overall if your scenario played out. Even if it meant I had to watch my team lose, that's fine. I can accept that. I've watched them lose before, man. 1998 was a tough one to swallow with the whole shootout fiasco with Gretzky, right? Yeah. But at the end of the day, I would be a hypocrite if I said I didn't want to see the sport grow. I think it's kind of a fallacy that Canadians have, this mindset that like we're the best in the world. And I'm going to borrow back again from what Merrick was saying earlier about we have this like idea that we don't want anyone to be as good as us. I'm not of that mindset. I would be happier as a hockey fan, not a nationalistic hockey fan, but just as a hockey fan, if more countries were better than Canada, always. Because it will mean that the leagues as a whole will benefit, both the KHL, the NHL. I'd like to see them on par. I'd like to see this idea of a rivalry where, you know, it's just the potential for these teams to be that good, because it means I can watch great hockey. Yeah. You know, it's not a bad thing to me. There is an argument for being watered down. I get that. I understand that. But hey, you know what? If we a utopia for a hockey fan would be that any team could actually win, and not just because it's watered down and that type of argument, but rather there's just that many good players. That's the other side of the coin that I think a lot of people forget about. That's a good thing.
Exactly. I mean, and you don't want the same team winning all the time. You don't want the same two in the final all the time. You don't want the same matches to happen all the time, because then it's just going to get repetitive, and it's going to be like, oh yeah, we know what happens here. There's no point even watching. There's no point caring, because yeah, Canada's going to play the US in the final every year.
Well, we saw that as 2010. You know.
Exactly. Yeah, but I mean, if you saw that again this year, would it be a disappointment, or would it sort of?
Well, I would enjoy it, because like I'd prefer to be just a general hockey fan. You know, I do get excited about the Olympics, and I do want to root for my country in that regard. But I think that would be a draw. But I think there's a lot of these teams potentially could do the same, and maybe we are better off if it isn't the same two teams in the final. There'll be a lot of griping Americans and Canadian fans, of course, but this Olympics time zone situation, let's face it, folks, if you're in my country, good luck avoiding spoilers if you're not getting out watching this game in the wee hours of the morning. Like, it's not going to happen. So for the benefit of the sport, hey man, give me a Sweden, Finland, Russia, you know, in the finals. Hell, you know, have you know,
Slovakia. Switch.
Hey, why not? You know, if kids in Latvia and Austria are watching them, you know, their two teams in the finals, they're going to grow up possibly becoming hockey fans. You know, some of them will. And some of them will watch the sport and be enamored by it, and they'll want to play the sport, and they'll grow up, and some of them will get pretty good and help improve the program, and some of them won't be as good, but they'll become coaches, and they'll have kids or little brothers and sisters that'll do the same thing. It takes time. You know, people talk about like the whole Wayne Gretzky trade, you know, and did it impact California? And I would say at this point, we can honestly say it did. It took a few generations, but we're seeing guys in the first round getting drafted out of California now. It takes time. Can happen. It's just patience is necessary for it to happen. So, sure, man, bring on Latvia, Austria in the final. Norway, Slovenia for the bronze medal, you know. I could accept it. As a Canadian fan, I want to see my team medal, but I see the bigger picture here, too, so.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, just one last note before we end up. You know, you were saying Russia's just filled this side with KHL guys. I mean, out of the KHL guys, Kovalchuk's a former NHLer. Rangelov's a former NHLer. Victor Tikhonov, I'm pretty sure, is a former NHLer. So there's pretty much all the ones that are in the KHL, most of them, you can go argue, former NHLers.
Yeah.
So they're sort of all gone there. I mean, they're sure they've had the experience now with the bigger ice, but whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing, well, just almost remains to be seen.
Absolutely.
And also Latvia. I don't be surprised to see Kasper Dogovins do something for Latvia in the Olympics. I mean, he was sort of one of the star players of this Spengler Cup and playing for Genevieve. Was he playing for Genevieve or was he not playing for Genevieve? Sorry, I've just got to scroll down, quick look. Yeah, played the Swiss team alongside Matteo Lombardi and Tobias Stepan, so... Yeah, it's just, I mean, even so, like Latvia, you're talking about, I mean, Austria's got Grabner and Vanek, and so, yeah, every team's got a couple of players that regular just NHL fans would know, which is sort of helps them out as well, except Norway. No, I don't think Norway's got any, except Zuccarello. Is Zuccarello Norwegian? Yes.
Yeah, that sounds right. But I mean, you know, there's also merit to having, you know, guys that are in the Swiss league representing their yeah. country too. I mean, that helps that league grow, and it's not a bad thing. That's as DDP would say,
that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing.
That's right.
Tilt his head and smile. So yeah, we sort of yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I don't think there's a real clear cut favorite, but I almost don't think there's a real clear cut underdog. I think any game could go any way. I think everybody expects the cream to sort of rise to the top towards the end. But I'm not quite sure. I mean, I like Finland. I like Switzerland. I like Switzerland with if Hiller can get going. I like Sweden. If Henrik Lundqvist. And so, I mean, you've got Henrik Lundqvist, but the backup's Jonas Gustafsson. It's not like Gustafsson hasn't had a bad year either. So if Lundqvist sort of does go to hell in a handbasket, it's not like they don't have the handy backup. And even aside like the Czechs, I mean, the Czechs now, they're probably, I think they're the Czechs, I mean, they've got an awesome front end. I mean, Jager, Krejci, Martin Hans has been all right this year. Plekanec is always sort of there. But, of course, my final thought is Thomas Kabale. Is Thomas Kabale sort of going to help the Czechs? I mean, he's sort of one of the few non-NHLers in that Czech side. They've got Roosevelt, they've got Schmid, they've got Zidlicky, and then they've got Kabale. Would a player like Kabale sort of help? Is that why they've got Nedved as well, and Jager probably? Sort of just add that experience of playing several years in a major league. Even with anybody, has sort of got anybody over the age of maybe 35. To sort of having experience help aside, especially when your goalie is Andrei Pavlik, probably.
It's a tough call with the Czechs. The Czechs are a team that I wouldn't really doubt as potential. I guess the lack of a better way, because all these guys on this team are pretty talented players, and I think, you know, yes, some of them are pretty old. But if they're used in the right situations and they get the, you know, the right types of shifts and line combinations, could be really dangerous. You know, like you have for example, two guys that work together really well, and Hemsky and Jager, they never really get to play other than when they're in this situation. And you have younger guys on this team like Frolik, you know, that can help run longer shifts. And you got Plate from the Lightning, that pretty young player, and Sobotka as well. I mean, there's energy guys on this team. So I don't know. It's hard to say. The goaltending situation is a little questionable, I guess, for myself, because I'm not familiar enough with the KHL guys. But who knows, man? It's not like Pavlik's terrible. He's a starter. His team might not be that great, but is that more him or this team he's on, right? I don't know. The Jets are not on fire yet. They have problems too. So,
and we've still got to remember there's still a month out before the Olympics, so anybody can get hot at any time between now and then.
That's right. And they got one of my favorites, Radko Gudas, which I picked in all of my hockey pools, I think. I like that guy. Kills people. He's awesome.
And we go full circle. We start with violence and we end with violence. And with that, that will pretty much be the end of the...
That's right. We survived. Hey, maybe we'll even be able to pull off five before the Olympics if we can get some schedules out. Or maybe, hey, you never know, border hockey fans out there. We got a few people in our group that might even put out their own podcasts without us, God forbid. Oh, we'll get traded.
Speaking of that, we might as well plug the site, Border Hockey Fan. We have home of the now Kick-Ass Hockey Show, which is on iTunes, Stitcher. Always catch it on the website. There's rumors to be more. I'm not quite sure what's in the pipeline, but there's always going to be content up. So it might take a little while because we all have lives, but there will be content up. There'll be content up for the Olympics, heading into the Olympics. We just had a brilliant World Junior coverage. We had Spengler Cup coverage. We have pretty much anything you can think of. And hell, if you don't think we do a good enough job, then hell, come right for us and prove that you're good enough.
That's right. You can shoot us an email at boardhockeyfan@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at boardhockeyfan. You can hit either one of us up. I'm at G of the Internet. That's capital letter G of the Internet. And you can, of course, hit up that damn double C at.
What the hell?
What the hell are you?
My screen just went blank.
Uh-oh. I think we may or may not have lost that damn double C.
Everything's just...
Well, I think we may have lost connection. I don't know if this is on the air. You can hear me talking. I can't hear Chris. So I will have to sign off for us.
I think I'm back.
Oh, there you are. All right. That is hobo style. All right.
Yeah, everything just crashed. Just gone without warning.
Well, so, we're gonna have a bit of a silence gap possibly at the very end here. So.
Yeah, because of technical issues, which have once again plagued me for the second episode in a row.
Well, we pretty much made it right to the end though, so, and we got most of our cheap plugs in. If this makes it to the podcast right now, it's an Easter egg.
It's only at the end. I am that Dan Double C. If it does make it, you're, of course, you've pronounced it out, G of the Internet. I don't know what anybody's going to hear anymore. But this has been the Border Hockey Fan episode number 4. Don't know when the 5th will happen, but sort of keep an eye out on Facebook, Border Hockey Fan, Twitter, Border Hockey Fan. Keep an eye on the website. It'll be there somewhere. Yeah. Just keep an eye on us. Just keep an eye on our social media. We'll let you know when the next podcast is on air.
Yeah, keep your heads up. I'll let them know you're there.
Yeah. And with that, That's how you end a podcast, ladies and gentlemen. For G, I'm Double C. Thanks. See you next time. Bye.